My husband, Larry C. from Oceano.
My name is Larry. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful, sober, drunk, but by the grace of a loving God. I always like to give myself a little note and, you know, kind of have an idea of what I'm going to pitch about. But I I've been sober since July 22nd, 1973. That's 43 years I've been sober, but by the grace of a loving God. And I don't deserve it. I do not deserve it. I was a liar, cheat, and a thief. Didn't care. The only reason when I came into AA, the only reason I believed in God was just in case all those Catholics were right. You know what I mean? That was it. And I remember my sponsor telling me, well, you got to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. And I looked at him and I thought, that guy? He had blonde hair, blue eyes, and a beard. And I didn't trust white people at the time, you know what I mean? That was the guy he told me to turn my will over to. And I thought, that ain't going to happen. You know what I mean? I remember thinking to myself, it's been weird. I belong to other 12-step programs other than Alcoholics Anonymous. And God has chosen to use me as a sponsor in those programs. But I've only sponsored one guy in AA. You know, and I keep thinking, you know, when you're 43 years and you're kind of going, well, God, what did I do? Is it because my ego? Is it, you know, but this guy, his name is Sean T. Okay, and Sean, I've known since he was 16 years old, 18 years old. He's 40 some years now, 42, I think, or 43. And Sean, I texted him. I said, I'm speaking over Santa Maria. You know, pray for me. And he goes, hammer step one. That's what he texts, hammer step one. So the one thing I can share with you is I only drank for 7 years, but I had 21 years of alcoholism, okay? And that means that I came from an alcoholic family. My family, my dad, I watched my dad beat the hell out of my mother. I watched him drunk at a bar. Make a pass at some guy's wife. I saw my old man get, boom, up against the wall. And the guy had him by the throat, you know, like this. And my old man, he just laughing at the guy. He was so drunk, he just laughing at the guy. But it was so humiliating to the guy, he just dropped him and realized how drunk he was. And here as a kid, I'm watching that, you know. And we used to, I remember my sister and I, my sister Linda and I, being at the bar after on Halloween. They dress us up in Halloween and sitting, and they have a picture of this, us sitting at the bar, you know, at Lester's bar. That was my life, you know. My dad worked hard, had 7 kids. I was the oldest of 7. There's a lot of oldest in AA, you know what I mean? There's a lot of oldest. They must have dropped us all on our heads or something. I don't know what the deal was, But the thing that I realized was that being in that situation of being the oldest, I had to sit with my sister when my mom was getting the hell beat out of her. 2 o'clock in the morning, she'd wake us up, the three of us, my brother Frank, Linda, and myself, wake us up in the middle of the night. We knew, pack the bag. This is as kids, 7, 8, 6. As kids, pack the bag, grab your sister, grab your brother, get in the car, sit in the back seat, and wait for mom. That was the deal. Okay? And there we are sitting at 2 o'clock in the morning. It could be, it was raised in Southern California. It could be February. It could be December. It didn't matter. You know? We was there, sitting in the back, and I remember my sister, Linda, going, what are we doing? And I'm going, shh. That's where I came from. That's the alcoholism I came from. You don't trust anybody. You never tell anybody what's going on. And you only people you do trust are the alcoholics in your family. That's it. Now, we are all sick from alcoholism. Okay? And here we are. Hey, dude. And here we are just trying to make it. You know, at 15 years old, I took my first drink. I thought I had found the elixir and the cure for cancer, because I remember sitting at a meeting and somebody sharing this, and they said, "Let's get drunk and be somebody." You know, and I knew exactly what they were talking about. My sponsor used to say, I wasn't a has-been, I was a never-was. And I knew exactly what that meant. You know, and that's where I came from. So as soon as I took my first drink, I could talk to girls, I could dance, I could do whatever in the heck I wanted. But I remembered my dad and what kind of an alcoholic he was. At that time, my father was on Skid Row in San Diego during the wintertime. And then during the summertime, and then he would get on the train and go to, and it's not a, you know, the train where everybody gets on. I mean, it's, you know, it's where the gates open, you know, he'd jump in, yeah, and go to Arizona during the winter. And that's what he did. Every year he did that. He'd just go from San Diego, Phoenix, drunk on his ass, living on Skid Row, you know, and he sobered up. He had 21 years of sobriety. I was able to be with my father during his sobriety. He was one of my sponsors and one of my mentors in Alcoholics Anonymous. He saved my ass. There's a lot of drunks that saved my ass. Well, we lost one recently, Gail S. We lost her. Gail was a tough, tough, tough bird, boy. But the one thing I realized, and this is what I'll share with the new people, when you find somebody who tells the truth and you hear it, stick with those people. Go to meetings where they go to, because you're going to hear. You could be, no matter where you're at, no matter, you can be, "Oh man, I got to get divorced," or "Oh, I lost my job," all right? And you can hear those people, and something triggers in your brain of going, "I'll be all right. I'll be okay." I don't know how it works, but that's how it worked for me anyway. That was my alcoholism, and that's where I came from. Being raised in that alcoholic family, the one thing I realized, part of alcoholism, okay, and being involved in an alcoholic family, is there's a lot of negative thinking, a lot of fear, a lot of emotions that come along that are really, really bad. But nobody shares that. Nobody talks about it. If somebody came up to me and said, "Larry, how you doing?" I'd say, "Oh, everything's cool. Everything's good. Life is good. I don't know what to tell you. Do you need help with that, Larry? I mean, that looks like a big thing you're carrying there. Do you need help with that?" "No, I'm all right, man. I'm all right. Yeah, just being a man. Yeah, I'm okay." That kind of thing, you know, going to work hungover. You know, sitting in the bathroom at work, you know, trying to get better. You know, we worked where I worked is from 18, 19, 20, 21 before I got fired. That was the only thing that I lost in the alcoholism, was I got fired from that job. But I would sit there and smoke dope in the bathroom, come back out, and we had these huge machines that you could get. I mean, if one of the wheels hit you in the hand, it just cut it off. Be sitting there, I'd be working, no big deal. You know what I mean? And the reason I lost that job was my boss, how dare him, wanted 8 hours of work from me, and on every Monday, he would only get 5. How dare him get rid of me, you know? When I got out of there, I just thought, "Well, the hell with you, dude. You're losing a great man." Drunk. I remember a few months later, I had married this young lady, and her name was Mary, and I was sitting there crying in my beer because I didn't have a job. And what kind of a terrible husband I was. I mean, I was feeling all these emotions and just getting drunk, hammered. We're sitting there at a junior high school park. You know what I mean? I mean, it was out in the football field kind of thing. And we said, "We got to get out of here, man. We got to get out of here. We need to go somewhere." My dad was in Phoenix, Arizona. And my sister-in-law was in Las Vegas. And my money was on Las Vegas because I didn't want anything to do with that son of a bitch who used to beat up my mother. I don't want anything to do with that guy. He had already been in AA for 2 years. We tossed a coin, flip coin. Heads, Phoenix. Tails, Las Vegas. Heads. How about 2 out of 3? That's what I remember saying. How about 2 out of 3? Flip it again. Heads. So we ended up going to Phoenix. On that trip, I made sure I had recreational drugs because I wasn't going to drink. I didn't want to get a DUI. I was as messed up as a monkey in a forest fire driving to Phoenix, Arizona from Los Angeles. You know what I mean? I'm sitting there looking at the yellow line, just tripping on the line. And it took me 12 hours to get there. Normally, it's from Los Angeles to Phoenix. It's, what, 7 or 8, whatever. Yeah, 12. I'm sitting there just tripping. First thing my dad does when I come into the house, he opens the door and he says, "Welcome, son." Here he is. He's sober. I've never seen my dad sober. You know, he really wanted to love me. And I'm loaded. And I said, "Dad, I got to get some sleep. I've been on the road for a long time. And I went inside and got in bed. He says, "Sure, son, sure." I got in bed and it just laid there, just wired for sound, you know, for hours. First thing I did when I woke up, I thought, "Shit. My dad's sober. How am I gonna get loaded? How am I gonna get drunk? My dad's sober. I mean, I gotta figure this out. I can't. You know, I got my wife there, and I can't. I was messed up because I couldn't figure out how I could drink, get loaded, and be around my dad because." You ain't got a place to stay, you know what I mean? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking. All I thought about was my stinking ass. I didn't even really care about the woman I was married to. All I thought about was me. So I'm sitting there, and my dad got pissed. I remember him getting pissed at me. He got really upset, and he said, "I'm going to a meeting." And I kicked into... oldest son, alcoholic family, roll. Boom, pull back, fear, negative thinking, everything went bad. He came back about an hour and a half later, and he said, "Son, I love you." And he hugged me. And I thought, what the hell do they do in that AA, man? Did they shoot him with heroin or something? I mean, this guy is totally different. Why? What the heck was going on here? So I remember sitting there, and I go, "Dad, I'd like to go to one of those AA meetings with you as a visitor. I want to be a visitor." Now, I'll tell you, my 7 years of drinking, okay, I'll tell you about my drinking real quick to prove that I belong here. At 19 years old, I remember I started drinking at 15. By the time I was 19, I knew I was going to die drunk like my old man. I knew I was going to die that way. The way he was, I was going to be like that. There was no doubt in my mind. So what I did at 19 years old, I raised my glass and said, you know, "Balls out, man, let's go." Boom. That was it. I was an alcoholic, and I knew it, and I was going to die an alcoholic. I knew it at 19. Some guys I hear in meetings, you know, they're 50. They realize, "Gee, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, my gosh, what am I going to do?" Yeah. Me, I'm at 19 years old going, "Let's go, man. Let's go." I remember sitting there at my first AA meeting. Black Wally was there. He had 17 years. Joe Marquez, my father, Jesse, Elva, and all these people. Okay, and we were in South Phoenix. And my sponsor used to get up and he'd wring his hands. He'd stand up. His pitch, you know, and a lot of people, we all sit down. I still sit down. But he would stand up when he was doing his pitch, when he was going to talk. And he'd say, "My name is Wally. I'm an alcoholic." And he'd say, "I didn't say I used to be an alcoholic." He said, "I am an alcoholic. And he would go on and pitch about the 12 steps. That was his deal. That's all he talked about. He talked about being a slimy, stinking, dirty-ass drunk. And he would say things that just blew me away. He would, all these people, I would take him to meetings. I lived with him. I basically stayed with him. I don't know about your sponsor, but where we were raised in Phoenix in the 70s, my dad had Wally, and I knew I was Wally's sponsoree. I knew it. I mean, that was it. So I went with him. Wherever he goes, you know, and he would speak at meetings. And he would say, "Do you know the reason you're sober today? God damn it, boom." You know what I mean? And that would be at the meeting, and I would think, "Oh God, Wally, you know, there's a bunch of religious people here. You can't say those kinds of things." But I didn't say anything to him. He was a huge, huge part of my life. We would sit there I would knock at his door 4 a.m. My wife had thrown my ass out again, and I was sober. And Wally would not open the door, and this blast of heat would come out, and he would say, "What are you doing, boy? Have you been drinking?" And I'd just grit my teeth, and I'd say, "No, I haven't been drinking." He goes, "Well, come on in." And I'd sit there and tell him my tales of woe, all the terrible things that woman had said to me. And he says, "Well, we'll go to a meeting tomorrow. Go on, there's that bed over there. You take that bed. Here's the pillow. Go on over there." And he didn't even listen to me. He didn't want to listen to me. He didn't want to listen to all the crap that I was going through with this woman. I'd wake up and I'd think he'd listen to me again. "Yeah, we'll go to the meeting." We went to a meeting. And for some reason, I'd get an answer at that meeting. Wally knew that was going to happen. He didn't. He never said, "Oh, poor Larry. Yeah, she's so bad. Oh, God." No, he said, "Let's go to a meeting, boy." That was it. We'd go to a meeting. I'd hear what I needed to hear. You know, I don't know about you, but that kind of blew me away. I truly believe, this is what I believe, as Larry sees it, that God got sick and tired of being sick and tired and grabbed my ass and said, "Larry, you're here. I want you here." And that was it. Now, that might not be your concept of God, but that was my concept of God. And this guy, loved me. Okay? I mean, I can imagine if it was, you know, brimstone and everything, but this guy loved me. When I had my spiritual awakening in Alcoholics Anonymous, it came on a day where my sponsor wasn't there. There was no meeting. There was nothing going on. There was no way I could get to call somebody. There wasn't anything. It was just me and my higher power. I got down on my knees. I said, "God, help me." Went to bed. My guts were all messed up, but I went to bed. Woke up, my guts are all messed up. And I'm thinking, well, this higher power ain't that good, man. I mean, it didn't change anything. What the heck's going on here? How I realized I had made contact with a higher power, it was the first damn time in my life, at 23 years old, that I had ever asked God for anything. I'd never asked God for anything. And that's when I knew I believed in God. I had another spiritual experience when I was 16 years old. My grandmother told me to go down and see the priest over at the Catholic Church, and I was going to help him do something. Yeah, I was straggly, 16-year-old kid. You know, I got in my lowrider car, went over to the church, and the priest, he was a drunk, but yeah, he wasn't drunk that day. He says, "Larry, I want you to take these boxes to these addresses here." And I was supposed to take boxes to these poor people. I don't know. At 16 years old, no concept. All right, so I went over there. Took it to the first family. They thanked me very much. Second family, I took it to them. And there was this little girl. All right, little Mexican girl. She looked at me, and as I had long hair, straggly, she goes, Santa Claus. She thought I was Santa Claus. I'm a big guy.
I'm fat.
Yeah, I'm fat. Santa Claus. And here I am, 16, going, no, I'm not Santa Claus. You know, and she's talking to me in Spanish, and I'm talking to her in English. Yeah, because I was raised that way. You know, don't speak Spanish. Oh, my God. Teacher would get upset. So I'm sitting there, and she was telling me, you know, Santa Claus. And I said, no, I'm not Santa Claus. And I handed the food and the presents to the little girl, and she just insisted that I was Santa Claus. And I said, okay, I'm Santa Claus. And I walked out of there, and the thought came to me to pray for that family. I'd never thought about praying for anybody, but the thought came to me to pray for them. And that's when I realized I had something in relationship to a higher power. Something for me was realizing that with that little kid. And I continued, you know, I didn't get it. Okay, I didn't get it. I continued, I drank till I was 21, ended up in this meeting, and I'm sitting there with all these crazy people, all old, sitting there, and I'm 21, man, they're all old. What the heck do they got to share with me? You know what I mean? What do they got to share with me? And then they started talking, and they told me what happened to them, what it was like, and what it's like now. The one thing I realized that these people were telling me what was going on in my alcoholism to that point. Okay, I recognized it. Now, that moment of clarity that comes to people, step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. For me, that was sanity, where I realized that these people weren't lying. They were telling the truth. Now, there was a lot of meetings that I would go to, 5:30 meetings, and I remember going to 8 o'clock meetings, and there was a lot of old-timers there, and I would hear them pitch, and I'd feel great. I mean, I just felt good. And I'd go to these 5:30 meetings, and there was all these guys, you know, measuring their own, you know, mine's bigger than yours, let me tell you how to do it, blah, blah. And I'd walk out of there like sick. I was just negative. It was just hostility. There was all this boasting and all this, well, this is how to do it. This is how, you know. And I'd walk in and I told my sponsor, Black Wally, I said, Wally, I walk into these meetings and I go to these and everything's cool. And I go to these. And he goes, well, maybe you shouldn't go to those meetings. You know, I was like, wow, that was pretty brilliant. Never occurred to me. I thought everybody had to go to these different meetings. You know, I mean, you had to go to these meetings. Well, I still go to 5:30 meetings. My wife goes to 5:30 meetings. I really don't hang out at 5:30 meetings, but if I need them, I go to those meetings. You know what I mean? I go to a meeting in Napomo, a 8 o'clock meeting, or 6:30 meeting in Napomo. And the reason I go there is because there's a lot of sobriety. I always like when people are new. In fact, up on the Mesa this month, January, of course, there's like 6 people celebrating 1 year of sobriety. And I'm thinking of going to that meeting so I can hear what they got to share. And I'm sure they'll take up the entire meeting. Yeah, sharing it, you know, which is cool, what the hell. But the thing is that I realized when I had gotten here that my first year of sobriety, I had divorce. I had a daughter. Bernadette Rose was born on April 23rd, 1974. And that was exactly 9 months and 1 day from the first day I took a sober breath. Kind of blew me away. I thought, wow, that's kind of weird, but yeah. As women would say, well, you got 2 weeks, either 2 weeks ahead or 2 weeks behind. For me, I took it as a message from God that my daughter did not have any alcohol in her system when she was born. The thing I also realize is my daughter, who is now 42. She'll be 43 this April. She's never seen me take a drink in 43 years. Now, that might not be important to you, but it was important to me. She did see alcoholism. One thing I realized, just because you're sober doesn't mean you're sane. You know what I mean? I've learned that being sober is really important, but getting the sanity and getting to that place of understanding what life's about, that comes periodically. Some days is good, some days is bad. I'll tell you the reason I know that. I was in San Luis Obispo. I had a 9mm Glock in in my pants. I was 19 years sober, and I went into this AA meeting in San Luis Obispo to kill a man. And I was sitting in that meeting. People were reading chapter 5. They were reading the 12 traditions. And I'm looking at the door, 19 years sober, sitting at that meeting with that gun loaded, one in the chamber, waiting for that guy to come in. I had already realized that I was going to prison or cops were going to shoot me, and I was willing to go through that. That's how insane I was. I was sitting in there, guy never shows up. Larry, do you want to talk? Yeah, I'm Larry. I'm an alcoholic, grateful, sober, drunk, but by the grace of a loving God. Today I'm sober. Yeah, I did my thing. Just crazier. Crazy. I was going to kill somebody in a meeting. Oh, my God. Just because you're sober doesn't mean you're sane. And I'm sitting in there, and the guy never showed. And I remember leaving that meeting, and it was the first time I ever felt safe in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Luis Obispo. I thought, man, that was good. But that was nuts. That was crazy. That was crazy. Yeah, I mean, what the heck is that? And so I realized that just because I'm sober doesn't mean I'm going to be sane. You know what I mean? I'm a grateful, sober drunk, but by the grace of a loving God. Bernadette Rose was born. I used to go to meetings in Phoenix, Arizona. And there was this meeting, the Candlelight House. And the meeting started at 10 p.m. Our meeting place had pillows, couches, and there'd be 30, 40 people in there. And the meeting would not end until everybody got a chance to talk. We would leave there at 4 o'clock. I'd get up. I'd leave there, go to bed, wake up at 8 o'clock, and go to work. Did that for a lot of years. I mean, that was where I was at. I'd go to a meeting. I'd feel great. I'd walk out the door, and the first thought that came to me was get drunk. The obsession was with me every time I walk out of a meeting. I'd go to a meeting. I'd feel great. Everything was good. I'd walk out the door, and the obsession would come back. I wanted to get drunk again. I would go to meetings, and I'd hear guys who sobered up on the same day that I sobered up. There were six of us. Come back and talk about the arrows in their asses after taking that first drink. And that scared me, and I wouldn't think about drinking. As soon as I hit that door, the obsession was there. Now, it never occurred to me, the only time I ever heard that voice when I was drinking of have another one was when I took that first drink. Because I don't know about you, but when I took that first drink, there was this little guy in my brain who said, Larry, you're coming down, dude. I don't know where you're going to get some, but you need some more. You need to get some more. Man, we got to rip it off. We got to rip off somebody. We got to do whatever we got to do. But man, you're coming down. Come on, Larry, we got to go. And that little dude was in my brain every time I took a drink. Was always there. Never stopped. Was relentless when it came to running my life. I was sitting there at a meeting, and I realized I hadn't taken a drink, and that little guy hadn't shown up. And the only reason that happened was, but by the grace of a loving God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I do not deserve to have 43 years of sobriety. If it was up to me, I would be out in the middle of it. I would be living in Compton, California, with coming to and a woman standing over me with a knife pointing at my throat, wishing me that I would die. I would have kids around me who hated my guts and just wanted me to die. That's what where I would be if I was drinking right now. I mean, there's no doubt. That's where I would be. You know, and 43 years, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I never, ever perceived. Ever perceived. To my best thinking, I could never, ever come up with the life that I have today. My best thinking. My best thinking, in fact, got me here. All right? Every time I thought about taking that drink, that was the deal. That was the deal. Larry, let's get drunk. Let's get drunk and be somebody. You know, that's where I came from. That's what was going on with me. So as things happen, now with 43 years of sobriety, there's a lot of stuff that happened. Divorces, losses of jobs, sitting with an employer and saying, well, Larry, after what you just said, that was pretty offensive to George here, and we need to ask you to leave. And I'm thinking, well, there's my chip. Let me show you my chip. God damn. Yeah. Here's my chip. Yeah, I'll show you my chip. So I said, I tell you what, I get it. I'll see you later. It's the best thing that ever happened. Now, sometimes there's things that happen to us and we think, this ain't good. And it's the best thing that ever happened. I don't know why that happens. You know? The thing that I can share with you about God, for me, I'll be sitting there praying. This doubt comes into my brain, Doubt comes into my brain. And I go, God, please help me with dealing with this particular thing or that particular, or talking to this person or doing that. And this little voice comes into my brain and says, Larry, why do you doubt me now? I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God on July 22nd, 1973. And here it is, 2017, and I'm sitting there questioning God's wanting for me. And it's so humbling to realize, Larry, this is bigger than you, buddy. I don't know what you're talking about, but we need to move on. That's my higher power. Today, I can tell you my God loves my stinking ass. I don't know why. I don't deserve it. But God loves me unconditionally. Now, I don't know if you can come from a place of the only reason I believe in God is all those Catholics are right, to a place of going, God loves me unconditionally. Now, I don't know if you know what unconditional is. You can look it up, but for me, it means no matter what I do, no matter how I act, no matter what I say, God loves my stinking ass. I don't deserve it, but he does. I got that from Alcoholics Anonymous. I got that from other people sharing at meetings, talking about the same thing Bill Wilson talked about when Ebby came to talk to him on page 8. You go through page 8 through 10 in the big book. And Bill talks about being in the hospital and them telling Lois that, I don't think Bill's going to make it. I mean, I think with his DTs, he'll end up having a heart attack and that's going to kill him. And Bill is sitting there, half drunk, half sober, realizing that he put himself in a situation where his wife is worrying about him dying. All right. And Bill's thinking, what the heck did I do? I can relate to that. I understand that. I can understand when Ebby came in and told Bill, I found religion. And Bill said, well, that's great, man. That's more booze for me. You know what I mean? I can relate to that. I can relate to when Ebby asked Bill if he wanted what Ebby was giving, his pitch. And Bill said, of course I would want it. I'm hopeless. That's where I had to get to, of understanding that I was a hopeless alcoholic. Okay. And I meet a lot of people that, they're not quite there yet. And I get it. I get it. If you're not there at being hopeless, I get it. You know? I get it. Not wanting to let go of the booze, I get it. But when I realized I was hopeless, and I'm not comparing myself to Bill Wilson, but I understand what the man's talking about. And when he got to that understanding of being hopeless drunk, it was easier to accept everything Alcoholics Anonymous has. Because I don't know if you've looked at those steps, but when it says we admitted we were powerless, it doesn't say Larry admitted he was powerless. It said we admitted we were powerless and that our lives had become unmanageable. That means I got to be part of you guys to be a we. I have to be with you. And I have to buy into what you believe. And I know a lot of people who maybe they can go to a counselor, behavior modification, where they put a little thing on your hand, you know, and you think about you grabbing the drink and, you know, and you get that. And those people sober up. I know people who go to church, you know what I mean? And I know guys, my cousin Victor, who used to drink with me and get loaded with me, one day, and he's a year older than me, he's 66, he goes, you know, I think I'll quit drinking. I'll just stop drinking. Marianne, I'm going to stop drinking. Yeah. And I remember sitting at meetings thinking, when is Victor going to walk through that damn door? You know what I mean? When's Bill going to walk through? All these guys I get loaded and drunk with, none of them came through. Only me. I'm the one here. You know, I ended up here. But those people sober up in a different way. Some people find religion. Some people do it. Me, I had to go to a program that has a lot of action. There's a lot of action here. If you think you can just go to meetings and stay sober, I did that and it really didn't work out for me. I had to work the steps. I had to buy into somebody telling me what to do. And I don't know about you, but I don't like to be told what to do. I'm a man, you know what I mean? And people say, no. And God has always told me I could ask for anything, but there's going to be three answers. Maybe. Yes and no. And that's it. Don't take it personal. That's the way it is. And I realize that that's my reality. That's what's going on in my life. That's what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. Suzanne is pictures here. This is a great woman. I loved her. She was with me in another 12-step program. She helped me. I always listened to her. I loved her laugh. There were so many drunks that saved my ass. Johnny O in Five Cities, Larry Ramey, Ed, yeah. There was just a lot of people that God put into my life so I could enjoy my life. There's a lot of drunks that saved my life. Wino used to say some things that I'm kind of winding down now because it's almost 8 o'clock and my wife would probably kill me if I went any further. But and I mumble, I apologize. But Wino used to say something. We were fortunate enough to go to a convention, a couple of conventions, world conventions. There was one speaker from Australia who said something that was really cool. He said, I did everything in Alcoholics Anonymous except 12 things. And I knew exactly what he was talking about. And there were other people. One of the things that I came up with was my saying, and you can share this if you want. You don't have to. But this is what I learned. All the booze in the world will not fix what's wrong with me. It took me years to understand that. No matter how many times I went to the bottle, it never fixed anything. It took me years to understand that. The other thing was, Wally used to say, I have found the enemy. It is I. And if you're a real alcoholic, taking one drink is like shooting No, it's like starting a fire on the porch and hoping the rest of the house doesn't burn down. I understood that. Or trying to shoot a shotgun a little bit at a time. That's what drinking was for me, taking that first drink. I couldn't do it. There's so many people that Dave Christie is somebody who saved my ass. He always called me the newcomer because he's sober longer than me. And so I'm the newcomer. And the thing that I realize with these people, I don't know about you, but there's people in this program that have passed or they're here. You know, and they save our ass every... I think about certain things. I could be working, you know, doing stuff or driving, and I think about stuff that somebody says, and it just calms me down. Now, I don't know how that works other than the we. It's the we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and their lives have become unmanageable. Those people who save my ass, and I do not deserve them. I do not. God put me with those people. God put me with those people. I'm a grateful sober drunk. Whenever you hear me say this, you know I'm finished. I'm a grateful sober drunk, but by the grace of a loving God. I'm going to share something with you that my sponsor used to share at every one of his pitches. He'd end his pitch, and he said he had heard this at a DUI, a DUI class. And this guy got up and said this, and it just saved his ass. And I tell you, it saved mine. He used to end his pitch with, "I would rather go through life stone sober, believing that I'm an alcoholic, than to go through life drunk, even just a little drunk, trying to convince myself I'm not." Thank you.
Larry will be available after the meeting to properly thank you and thank properly thank for so graciously speaking tonight. Wow. Also, a thank you to anyone who has a commitment at this meeting. Please save the cake after me. I would like to ask Mark Cameron to close with this room.